You're listening to Irish Sports Talk. Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 355, recapping Notre Dame's one possession loss to Navy, 27-28. Randall's here as well. We're going to go over the games with our thoughts and looking at some things that we expected, what we were hoping we'd see from Notre Dame, and maybe some things we didn't, as well as going over our list from our preview episode where we looked at different players at different position groups and our thoughts on their performance as well. So before we jump right in, Randall, is there anything that you wanted to just say to get us started?
Well, I think we just have to accept the fact that talking about losses is the new normal. It's sad, but that's where we're at in this season, and I don't think this isn't the last one.
Let's just start with the game changer. Notre Dame didn't have a lot of possessions, 6, which is one of the fewest out of any college program in a long time. But they were able to force Navy to punt, stop them, to give them a chance to get the ball back to go ahead. And there's 12 men on the field. That was what the replay officials saw. Brian Kelly did dispute it a little bit and complained about it in the post-game press conference. And that was definitely the game changer. Our defense was giving up a lot of yards, hadn't stopped Navy except for one other time in the game. They finally did it when we really needed them to. And then there's a stupid penalty on special teams, too many men on the field. And Brian Kelly did say in his Sunday teleconference that they weren't sure if Navy was going to go for it, if they were going to punt. And then so they kind of had their defense or some defensive personnel out on the field, and that's one reason why they were late in getting off.
Yeah, and supposedly that call was actually not special teams. Like, the defensive coaches would have been in charge of getting the right guys out on the field for that. So even though I think there needs to be a change at special teams coaching, that would have been the defense's call.
But definitely from that point on, I mean, Notre Dame did call some timeouts then, but the faith that Notre Dame was going to be able to stop them just wasn't there for me.
So, well, maybe get more later that the kicking the field goal at the end. So you would have gone for it on that?
Well, and I remember other times we've kind of thought that we thought this, and then in hindsight, maybe we thought differently. But no, I remember I was watching the game with you, and I said, you got to go for it. You got to go for a touchdown. Go for it on fourth down.
Well, I have a hard time being critical of that call. I mean, yeah, it would have been nice. I would have wanted them to go for the touchdown, but honestly, I'm not going to complain about it because they did. They had a long drive just before that, but that was because of the stupid penalty on punting with too many guys out on the field. So your defense had stopped them. You would have got the ball back. It wouldn't have been a 9-minute drive, and there's still 7 minutes on the clock. So technically, you got that 9-minute drive was because Notre Dame made a mistake, not because Notre Dame couldn't stop them.
And this wasn't, in my mind, the absolute worst call that Brian Kelly has made at all.
It's a one.
I just wish, in the moment, I was thinking, go for it. But it wasn't a huge, huge mistake in my mind to kick the field goal either, because that probably is the smarter thing to do.
Yeah, and this made it a one-possession game. If they would not have made it on fourth down, you know, they would have for sure had to stop them. Like, here it didn't matter if Navy scored. It would have still been, you know, they would have had to, if it had been a touchdown, you know, they had to go for the two-point conversion. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I would have wanted them to go for it, but I can't be critical of the call either.
Okay, let's get on into more kind of what we were hoping for and expecting. I was hoping that they would try to, because Navy likes to limit possessions, score as quickly as possible, go deep often. There was one really deep pass that Kaiser overthrew to Stefferson that would have been a really quick score. And Notre Dame did score. They scored out of the 6 possessions. They had 3 touchdowns and 2 field goals. So they were scoring points, only one possession where they didn't score points. And that was the quickest possession. That was a 3 and out. So at least they were quick on that one. But I was really disappointed. We and the final drive in the second half, Notre Dame had all their timeouts left over. And I know this might not be sound thinking, but instead of chewing up 7.5 minutes, however long that drive was, get down the field and score and get another possession if at all possible. Now, on the flip side, if Navy scores and runs out, if you're not able to use timeouts to have time left over in the half, you lose a possession, and Navy gains one. So it is risky, but I just felt like they had to, as much as possible, get as many possessions as possible. So they scored points, but I thought that they didn't push it downfield nearly enough to create more possessions.
Well, and there were just so many issues with the offense not being able to. They did move the ball against them, but they should not have had to punt that one time. I mean, just looking at some of the different offensive, you know, line. I mean, how they lined up and stuff. You know, it's third and short. You got no running back in the backfield. Sometimes there was, you had 7 guys on the line. You had 2 tight ends helping on the line, and they ran for no gain. Against Navy, an undersized Navy team who says that one of the first things they know when they come out there is like, whoa, these guys are big. So why can't they? And you look at what Navy was able to do running the ball. Their offensive line had a combined 4 starts before this season. So they had less experience on their offensive line than Notre Dame's massive experienced offensive lineman, and they did a much better job.
Pro Football Focus did grade out this game, and they put offensively, they thought our offensive line did a solid job. They graded out from the offensive position groups. Torrey Hunter graded out very high, and the offensive line, Quentin Nelson and McClinchy, graded out, I mean, solid, very solid, not spectacular, but very solid.
Well, but then I'd want to see the bad ones, because McGlinchey gets called for a couple, you know, false starts. Nelson got he got put on his butt in the one. He got completely knocked over. I mean, he had no chance. Like, how is some guy, a Navy guy, knocking him on his butt? This mauler, aggressive player that we have at left guard just gets set on his butt with no problem.
Okay, so offensively, not what we wanted to see. As far as it was it was just slow. Notre Dame didn't push the ball downfield. Defensively, Notre Dame had 4 tackles for loss. One was in the first half when they did force Navy turnover on downs in the first half on Navy's 1 drive. They had 3 other ones in the second half, but they were not able to stop the drive. Couple things were frustrating for me. Martini, he often had the quarterback, and I'm sure he was coached to do this, and I'm open to correction. However, why is he not hitting the quarterback? And I'm sure he's coached to do this, but at least hit the quarterback, because just standing there and causing the quarterback to pause for a second, although it might give the other defensive back who's covering the running back who's getting the ball, it might give him a little bit more time to get in position. Just hit the quarterback.
That was my complaint. He did it a couple times. He'd run up there, and then he'd stop, wait to see what the quarterback was going to do. The quarterback hacked the ball. Take him out.
And it seems like if he would have been more aggressive and hit the quarterback, that it would have, either the quarterback wouldn't have had time to pitch it, or the pitch might have gotten, might have been off, might not have been accurate.
Yeah. And it's hard. He did play a good game, but he was either big play or bad play. I mean, he made a lot of big plays. He ran down that on that long run. Was it a 60-yard run? Which he got help from the defender on that.
Yeah.
he did tackle the guy, made a touchdown saving tap, which
is too bad. It probably,
if they would have scored, Notre Dame would have time. But, you know, he was either making big plays or he was not making the play at all. Like, hesitant, like it. I couldn't understand why he was so aggressive on some, and then some of those he just stopped and wasn't aggressive enough.
I thought he was like that on pretty much every play when he was covering the pitch man. Anyway, this is atrocious here. We talked about in Navy's two losses, they were forced to throw the football. Either the offense was able to quickly score and get ahead, and the Navy offense had to make up points, or the opposing defense was able to hold the rushing attack of Navy in check. Well, Notre Dame didn't do a great job of either. They gave up, on average, 5.7 yards per rush, which is pretty much right in line with what Notre Dame has been giving up to Navy over the last couple of years, except for in 2012 when they really shut down Navy. That was under 4 yards per rush. I think it was like 3.7. There was one other year when Notre Dame gave up more, gave up significantly more. But generally, it was around that five and a half to maybe almost 6 yards per rush for Navy, which is just pathetic. I know we don't like to play Navy, but the thing is they're on the schedule, and so Notre Dame has to figure out a way to beat Navy every single year, because even though this is a solid team, a bowl team, this is not a talented enough team that should be giving Notre Dame fits, and they're doing it every year. Here's one thing that'll blow your mind, Randall. On third down, Navy had an average of 5.5 yards to go, which surprised me. That seems like a lot of yards to go on third down. However, they averaged 10.3 rushes on those third downs, and they passed it twice for an 8.5 yard average. On third down, Notre Dame's defense was just plain bad. And the thing is, even when they did hold them to fourth down, they converted 4 of 5 fourth downs. So even when they were stopped on third down or had when it was third and long, Notre Dame still wasn't able to stop them. I do have some quotes from Brian Kelly about that I want to get to later as far as changes that need to happen and some of his comments on that, which we'll get to. So, overall, I'm pretty depressed. I was disappointed, and now I'm depressed. I'm not sure what the cycles are of getting over depression, but
like I've said, you know, they can. This team is one that, you know, they could make some adjustments, they could do some things, and they could win. But I've always said Brian Kelly has to be willing to make the changes, and they're not.
Okay. Let's get to his quote. In the Sunday teleconference, Brian Kelly. Okay, I'm not sure what he was asked, but it was pretty much about making changes. This was his comment. "It's hard for me in these circumstances to think that major changes need to be made, other than continue to do what we're doing and we'll break through." Now, I could see that happen. It's possible that is true. However, even though there's a lot of young players, which he likes to say, there's 21 new guys in the 2-deep on secondary or whatever it is, we're losing to Duke, a Michigan State team who is awful, and Navy, year in and year out, we're losing, or it's a very close game with Navy.
Yeah. And I liked what the one tweet from The Turning Point said. He needs to stop making the excuse about young players. The reason they're playing young players is because they haven't done a good job developing the guys that they recruited before. In year 7 of a program, there's no excuse about playing young players. It is all on you. I don't care what you say. You'd have to have... it'd have to be complete disaster. But if you start looking at what happened to all the players, the seniors, where are they all at? It's all in the coaches for the, you know, that they have all these young players playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing if you're in year 2 or 3 and, you know, now you're playing your guys that you recruited, but you can't say that about this team. There are no guys here from another coaching staff. They are all guys that you recruited.
Yeah.
And it's developing.
It's developing and not getting enough players at certain positions. Like defensive back, they didn't have enough. They didn't recruit hard enough, get enough commits several years ago.
Yeah. So, at, That's a lame excuse. And I was very disappointed to hear that. I mean, what are you going to expect him to say? You know, he can't say this. But remember what he said was against Texas? There was all these questions. He said, ask me these again and in 10 games. Once we're, you know, once we played 10 games and we're still having these issues. Well, we're almost there.
One more week. Even though Brian Kelly did say that he doesn't think any major changes are necessary, he also said that about Brian Van Gorder on the defensive side of the ball. So,
and he did make a change.
And he did make a change. So even though he said this, that's what I expect him to say.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I expect any coach to say, especially in a post-game interview. However, things need to change. Major things need to change. Heads need to roll.
Yeah. The chopping block. Something's got to happen.
Yeah. Okay, let's go through some of the numbers from just from the game overall. And go ahead.
Oh, are you going to go through the position groups then a little bit?
Yeah, okay. In a second here. Well, actually, let's just do that, I guess, with the position groups. Let's start with the quarterback. Pro Football Focus gave Kizer some credit for not turning the ball over, but even though Notre Dame scored on virtually every possession and they moved the football on every possession except one, he did miss guys, especially to his right. He has been awful.
Which we talked about that before the game started, that whenever he throws to the right, which should be much better numbers for him, but for some reason when he goes to the right, his numbers are terrible.
And even some of the completions, it was the EQ or was it Stefferson who had that incredible catch that was thrown way behind him on a middle crossing
Stefferson.
Route? Stefferson.
The one-handed catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and on the first drive, you saw it right away because we talked about it before the game, and then right away on the first drive, he tried to throw it out to Dexter on a screen. It was terrible. It wasn't even close. There was nobody close to Dexter. Like, that's the easiest pass.
You wonder why he's wide open? Because teams are scouting Notre Dame and seeing that DeShone Kizer's awful throwing to the right.
Well, and then on the next one, Sanders was wide open, and he overthrows him. And that was on the first drive, which Sanders was down the center of the field. That's where he was open, down the center of the field. But yeah, for some reason, he is off on the right side. He can't make those. And there was multiple times where it was at least twice that would have been a sure touchdown, and he missed the wide open guys.
Remember last week, or what was it? It was against Stanford on fourth down when there was two receivers on the right side, and it was a game you were at. Were you at the Miami game?
Yeah.
I mean, that was also to the right where it would have been like a little screen pass out to the flats to C.J. Sanders. Torrey Hunter was blocking, but Torrey missed the block.
Oh, it was against Miami.
Yeah, the pass was a little bit high and back, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kizer did finish with 223 yards, three touchdowns, 19 of 27. So statistically, you know, not an awful statistical game, but definitely missed some opportunities where maybe Notre Dame would have been able to score more quickly and get the ball back.
Yeah, they would have scored a lot quicker, which, you know, would have likely given them another possession.
All right, the offensive line. I was going to be looking at Sam Mustafa, see if he's error-free, and he didn't get flagged for anything. So that's at least a step in the right direction. And to be honest, I didn't rewatch this game, so I didn't look as closely as I normally do. I just couldn't take it. I couldn't watch this game again. So I can't tell you exactly how I thought he did in pass protection and the blocking aspect of the game. Randall, you said you were going to be watching the left side of the ball in the offensive line. Any thoughts on that or the offensive line as a whole?
Yeah, the left side of that line struggled mightily. I wouldn't have given them as good a grade as what Pro Football Focus did. But it is just very disappointing at what this line. I don't know what their problem is. Is it the confidence? But they need to be playing much better than this. I mean, there's just no way around it. So I don't know. Maybe, I mean, the question is, you know, they're making all these mistakes. You know, are the backups that bad? You know, why aren't we seeing other guys out there a little more? I think it's one of those areas where Brian Kelly just thinks that they're going to break through, you know, and they're finally going to mesh and stop making these errors and get these penalties. But Mike McGlinchey's getting penalties. I mean,
well, Mustafa, first time starter, but he's been there for a few years.
Yeah, and these guys are just getting manhandled by an undersized Navy defense that is terrible. That is not supposed to be that good.
Did you think they really got manhandled that much? I don't remember watching the game.
They brought in extra tight ends. They did whatever they could, and Navy, they still couldn't run on Navy. I mean, it was mostly in the run game. They still got through, and a lot of times you saw them. It was almost like there was too many offensive linemen on one guy. And Navy was smart because he saw the linebackers wait until the offensive linemen were all engaged, and then they'd break through the gap and get the running back or get the quarterback. I mean, they waited long enough until the offensive linemen. Instead of watching for that, you'd have two guys on one Navy player or something instead of, you know, waiting for that linebacker, because that's a lot of times, you know, who got in there or filled the gap was one of their linebackers. And
that was another weak part of their team, supposedly.
Yeah.
The linebackers.
Exactly.
Okay, moving on. Tight ends, Lua Tua was someone I was going to be watching for. I did hear his name mentioned. I didn't rewatch the game because I'm too weak as a human. I couldn't handle it.
Did you see? I'll just show you right now. That's what I'm talking about. See how many guys are on the line? There's 7 guys on the line. The 5 linemen plus 2 tight ends. Adams ran for no gain on that play.
Yeah.
And it happened multiple times, you know, that they had tight end. Lua Tua was in there like we wanted him to be, but they just couldn't get it done. But they did, you know, run the ball on that one drive. They were able to run the ball.
They did. Notre Dame finished with 147 yards, didn't score any rushing touchdowns, but averaged 5.1 yards per carry and had a long of 18 yards. That was by Kaiser. Josh Adams had a run of 13 yards, finished with 73 yards.
I'm not sure to throw it in with the running backs or the offensive line, but everybody keeps saying that, well, this is Brian Kelly. He's going to pass the ball. This is who they are. You know, you're not going to see. They set a record last year for, I think it was rushing or average per game. They were rushing for over 200 yards per game. They've done it a couple years that Brian Kelly has been there. So this is pathetic when they say that, oh, Brian Kelly is only passed as what you used to be. He has run the ball. And they were successful
doing
it.
And last year they also passed it a lot, too. I mean, they were successful regardless what they were doing last year.
I think one of the most frustrating things is their longest drive, when Notre Dame was 14 plays, 75 yards right before halftime. If you look at how they did that, Josh Adams runs for 7. Josh Adams runs for 10. Josh Adams runs for 3. Folston runs for 6. Folston runs for 1. Dexter for 1. Kaiser for 18. Dexter run for no game. And then you have a false start penalty. Kaiser passed to Stafford. Then Kaiser runs for 9. Kaiser runs for no gain. Folston runs for no gain. Then Kaiser runs for 11 yards. And then it was the pass to Smythe for the touchdown. It was run, run, run. They had success all the way down the field. But they stopped doing that. You know, they did score, you know, they only had 2 more drives. They scored a touchdown and a field goal, but it was pass heavy. And even in the field goal, like if they would just run like that and be fine with the short yard, I mean.
But that's also what I was complaining about in this game, is if we chew up too much clock, we're not going to have enough possessions.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think that's what they were trying. I mean, I don't think they were thinking that. I mean, yeah. I see your point, but I don't think that was their plan. We've seen this in multiple games.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about the running backs. Tryon Folston carried the ball 4 times for 13 yards, had a long of 6, and Dexter Williams was another guy we were trying to watch for, and he had 3 carries for 7 yards. So Josh Adams got almost double what those two guys did. And then Kizer also ran 9 times for 52 yards. So Josh Adams, and Brian Kelly said a few weeks ago after the bye week that, you know, he probably were kind of indicated that he was dinged up a little bit. And I think, I mean, the last 2 weeks, it definitely looks like he is running with more explosiveness.
Yeah.
I think he's breaking more tackles. And, yeah, as long as he keeps on running like he is, I hope he remains the guy that gets the majority of the carries. Josh Adams also had 1 catch for 1 yard. And wasn't it Dexter Williams who Kizer overthrew?
Yeah.
Okay, he isn't listed here in the stats, but he would have also got 1 target. Tight ends, we kind of didn't mention that. Yeah, Smythe had that one, had 1 catch for a touchdown, so he came close a week ago, and he did get a touchdown on against Navy.
The other time, well, it's probably because they have no confidence in the tight ends, but I think it was the throw that Kizer overthrew, like it was way out of bounds, way over the head of, was it Hunter? Which he got hit right after he threw the ball, threw it out of bounds. I think it's when they punted. I think it was at the field goal. I'd have to check the drive. But on that play, Smythe was wide open in the center of the field. I mean, he was completely wide open. And you can see Kizer started on the right side of the field, and then he went to the left. And Smythe came from the right side and cut across the center, and Kizer didn't see him or didn't throw to him. So I don't know if he didn't see him or if it's just one of those things where
maybe
he just didn't have the...
It's like selective hearing. Kizer, he just sees who he wants to see out there.
Yeah.
All right, let's move over to defense now.
Well, with the wide receivers, Stepherson was very impressive in this game. I mean, he had obviously going home to his hometown. That was by far his best game of his career. Made some good catch, you know, that one-handed catch. And EQ, and then we saw Hunter. We finally saw the Hunter that we wanted to see all year. So it's pretty obvious those three guys are definitely the three main receivers. Stepherson, you know, has been starting, but he didn't, you know, wasn't as involved as he was in this game.
And he did finish with over 100 yards. Are you still surprised that we haven't seen Sanders? He had 1 rush, but he wasn't targeted in the passing game.
CJ Sanders?
Yeah.
He was targeted. I'm pretty sure that was him in the beginning of the game when he was downfield. And was it Stepherson? Okay, I think it was Stepherson. I had thought that CJ Sanders was the one target.
Where he was just overthrown.
I haven't written down that it was Stepherson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very surprised that he's not involved more. I don't know why.
All right, let's move over then to defense. Nico Fertitta, he did play. He recorded, I believe it was 1 tackle.
2. His 2 tackles, 1 solo.
And
well, he got
half a tackle for loss.
Yeah. And he was the one that was getting yelled at for, 12 guys on the field again on the goal line stand.
No, it wasn't.
It happened twice.
Oh, on the goal, yes.
It was like first and goal from the 1-yard line, and then there's too many guys on the field, and then it was half a yard. And then you saw Brian Kelly chewing him out on the sideline. And that... Obviously, I didn't see what happened because I wasn't at the game, but I can only imagine because that's what I saw happening the games I was at. It was Todd Light having issues getting his players on and off the field in that exact situation.
And it was also a safety that was the special team's 12 men on the field. That was Devin Studstill.
Yeah.
Another safety.
So they have had issues all year. I've seen it. It happened right in front of me that Todd Light's halfway on the field trying to tell the guys to come out or go in. Then they come over to the side. They're halfway there. Then they go back in. It's confusion.
Drew Tranquil had a great game the last couple years against the option. And He finished with 6 tackles, 1 solo, and he did go out with a head injury. He's gone through the concussion protocol. And, I mean, do you expect him to be back? I mean, do you think it's something similar to what Martini went through and Cage and some of the other guys? Do you think it's likely that he's back next week?
I think so. I'd say it's just what the other guys went through. Who was it? Was Julian Love the other one?
Yeah.
He got shaken up.
I believe it was Julian Love.
I think it'd just be, you know, they'll go through the protocol this week, and I think they'll be fine.
All right, and then cornerbacks. We did see a lot of man coverage, and unfortunately, the Navy was able to complete some passes on Notre Dame. I wish they would have been forced to throw a few more, and I still would have taken my chances with our defensive backs, even if, you know, we've got a lot of freshmen that are playing out there. Vaughn, like, got called for that pass interference, but there was one missed earlier, and yeah, I mean, I do think it was the right call, and I do think they missed one, the play earlier.
Vaughn was the one that should have been called. Was it him that got called then, or was that... It was Nick Coleman that got called for the pass interference.
Okay.
I have it written. Wrote down rewatching the game. Vaughn should... You know, they had a case that he should have been called. I mean, he was holding the guy, and it could have been pass interference. And the next one, Nick Coleman got called for it, and a lot of people thought it was a makeup call. I mean... Technically, it was probably pass interference, but I don't think they would have called it if the other play right before that wouldn't have happened.
Yes. I've definitely... Now, that gets called. I'd say that gets called most times.
Maybe, but they didn't call it. The biggest thing is just the inconsistency in some of these calls.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know why Coleman... He struggled this year, and then with the game... Julian Love, I was very, very impressed with Julian Love. I'd say I was most impressed with his play on the defense. I mean, when he was hitting guys, he was hitting them. One time he picked up the guy and threw him down. I mean, he was playing physical. That gives you a little bit of hope that these guys can...
The young defensive backs are definitely a bright spot moving forward.
Yeah.
All right, linebackers. Greer Martini had a very solid game. Didn't like we talked about, didn't like see him kind of pause there and wait for the quarterback to make a move. But he did finish with 11 tackles, had 1 tackle for loss, and I think he could have had a couple hits on the quarterback that he just didn't. He probably wasn't coached, was told to not do that. But
You saw the one reason, I thought, you know, he was just being hesitant, but the one reason that I would agree that maybe it's coaching is because Tranquil got called for that late hit, or the unnecessary roughness, I think is what they called.
But that was way later than what Martini would have been if he would have been hitting the quarterback.
But that call was pathetic. Like, the Tranquil couldn't see if he had the ball or not. Like, he pitched the ball in front of him. It was hard for him to see. It was a split second. Yeah.
James Onuwalu. He was up on the line a lot, and I thought that he just got swallowed up by the offensive line.
Didn't they learn that against Texas? Like, why are they...
I don't get it. The defense was just... They weren't stout enough at the line to be able to handle the offensive line, even though it's an undersized... What you're normally used to facing is undersized. A linebacker still isn't big enough, strong enough to be able to... stand his own.
Well,
he did finish with 8 tackles, had 1.5 tackles for loss.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple big plays. I think the one tackle for loss was like a loss of 6 yards or something. It's just, it'd be one thing if they had no defensive linemen, but you know, Deron Jones was standing on the sideline watching the game.
And we'll get to that. Niles Morgan also finished with 11 tackles. So him and Martini led the team with 11 apiece. And with that, let's move over and let's talk about the defensive line and Deron Jones. So what I wrote down for my when we were in the preview was, you know, Deron Jones, will he continue to be great? And I don't know. He was out there. You said he was out there for 2 series.
Yeah, for 12 plays.
And the two series were, in the first half, it was the one where they did force Navy a turnover on downs.
Yes.
And then when was the second one?
He was out there when they forced them to punt. You know, obviously the punt got overturned because of 12 guys on the field, but he helped them stop them again. And those were the two drives that he was out there.
Was he out there after the punt then?
He
couldn't have been for all of it because there was like 14 plays.
12 snaps, so. But he obviously made a difference. One of the most frustrating things is what Brian Kelly said after the game, like, well, you know, why didn't they use him more? And they said, well, Navy would have just run it to the outside. Like,
well, good. Just put John Jones by himself in the middle of the field and have everyone else on the outside.
That's what you want them to do. That takes away, like, I think it was Don Parks mentioned on Twitter, like, that takes away one of the triple options. Like, that, then it's not a triple option anymore. I mean, the guys have to go outside and then let the other players do their thing.
Okay, so there's been discussion on Twitter. Jerron Jones, did Kelly cover for him because Jerron Jones didn't want to play against Navy and because there's a chance he'd get hurt? I could definitely see that be the case. However, he was out there. And I know that the more you're out there, the more likely it is that you're going to get hurt, but you can be out there for one play and get hurt.
Yeah.
So part of me thinks that that's not true. But then I can't come up with a good reason why he wasn't out there.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, well, supposed to know in fact that he didn't want to play. I mean, Lewis Nixon either. There's guys, some of these interior defensive linemen don't like playing against the Navy. There's just a big chance of injury. You know, obviously, Jerron Jones had his knee injury. But I think that is, if the coaches actually let him stay on the sideline because he did not want to play, that is absolutely terrible decision by the coaches to go along with that. Because I honestly think he could have made a difference in this game. He did. When he was in there, he did make a difference.
Yeah.
And
I know, but
especially after the game he played, like how he played against Miami. I mean, can you imagine? This Navy offensive line was inexperienced. And if he can, all he has to do is blow up the middle of that line.
I would like to know, like, what is the chance of getting hurt against Navy? Because I was just trying to put this, like, in my own perspective. If I would be, I couldn't even really find a good example. But if I would be, you know, getting a little bit of pay, because, I mean, they're getting scholarship money. They're getting an education. So if I'd be getting paid a little bit, but I'd had the chance to make 50 times that, if I'd get, and I'd pretty much be guaranteed as long as I don't get hurt in the next 3 months, you know, would I be willing to do it? And I mean, it really, it does make you think, because I know
if I was an NFL GM.
They have insurance policies. I know. But still, let's say that you're a writer, Randall, and you're a little freelance writer, and you're trying to make it big time in the Chicago Sun-Times or something, and you're getting paid like, you know, $100 a week or something to write articles, and then they tell you, well, hey, Randall, we like what you're doing, and we're going to hire you full-time. You're going to be making, for sake of example here, you're going to be making $2 million a year. But first off, we need you to go over into the heartland of ISIS and report from there for a little bit of time. The chances of you dying are not guaranteed, but it definitely could happen.
It's very high.
So would you do that? If you could just stay at home for the few months and then go get the job. I know it's a poor example, but just put it in perspective or think of it in your own terms like that.
Well, if I was running the team that's going to pay you $1 million, I'd be like, I would question your commitment to the game. Like, oh, 1 week, are you not going to play, you know, against Denver because the next week you're likely going to be playing the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? You can't. I don't think the risk of the injury is high enough to take off for a game.
Well, and I would.
That's
also
why I don't think that Leonard Fournette, you know, people were saying, oh, he should sit for a year. Well, you got to play. At some point, if you just sit and wait for something to happen, you're not going to get it. And
I would also like to know, I know we fans, we think, oh, play Navy, guys are going to go down. Well, no one went down because of any knee injuries. There was some head injuries. And actually on offense looked like maybe the most potentially would have been.
Brain cells will grow back.
On offense, Torrey Hunter looked like that was maybe the scariest situation as far as losing the guy for a long time.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen on defense. So I'm curious to know, is there really that much of a higher chance of injury
against Navy? He's played against Navy before, and a lot. So why was this any different? 2 years ago he did. He couldn't play last year. 2 years ago he played a lot against Navy, and he survived.
Yeah.
And Brian Kelly had mentioned before this, NFL scouts are going to be watching.
That's what I don't get, because he did play. He just didn't play nearly as much as we expected.
If you're starting to do that, hold out players because of this and that, you're in dangerous territory, especially for the coaches, because their job is to win at the college level. I mean, don't put the kids in danger, obviously, but they came here to play football. If you're a wimp and can't go out there worried about getting hurt, then...
And, the other thing is, if Kelly or any coach thinks that, hey, it really is dangerous to play Navy that for this player...
Then take him off the schedule.
Then stop playing him.
Exactly. And what does this do for Jerron Jones? He stepped up, had a huge game, so the team is supposed to rally behind him. But then you guys go out there and play against this team. I'm going to stay on the sidelines so I don't get hurt.
Trust me, I don't like it. I was just trying to think of it. How would it be for me?
I'm just throwing that out there. That is one way you can lose your team. You can't be doing that. A leader will step up and lead you out there no matter what the risk is. If you're dedicated,
Jalen Smith.
Exactly.
He wouldn't have had to play it.
He wouldn't have had to play in the bowl game.
Yeah.
He got hurt. It ended up bad for him. It's just, I just think you're going to hear more and more of that, because I think more and more players are so worried about their future. I guarantee you that if this would have been 20 years ago, they wouldn't have done it.
Just get an insane insurance policy, and which I'm pretty sure that.
The thing is, Jerron Jones has to prove a lot of stuff for the NFL. I mean, he obviously had that really good game, but he's known to not play hard or take off on series in a game. Now he's taking off a whole game.
Okay.
So, anyway, the defensive line, I had big issues with him not playing and having Anawalu on the line. And I think, this transfers the offensive line as well. We've talked with Tony outside the podcast about this, right? And I'm more and more in favor of, even when it comes to strength and conditioning, having a second coach for the linemen. Because you look at Notre Dame's defensive linemen and offensive linemen, they should be much more aggressive, be getting bigger, stronger. And you look at how the guys look in the NFL that were at Notre Dame. I mean, it's not just the linemen, but even Zach Martin. I mean, look at Zach Martin now. I think...
And remember this spring, this fall, Brian Kelly said that Isaac Rochelle had his best spring and summer because he didn't have any back problems, and he made incredible strides physically. And I'm a little disappointed that, I think he's played pretty good at his strong side and position, but it hasn't resulted in a lot of getting after the quarterback, which he's not going to do a lot of anyway. But I did expect a little bit more. And maybe it's because the rest of the defensive line is just so bad. Obviously, Jerron Jones had an outstanding game last week, but it hasn't been that way throughout the first half of the season. So maybe offensive linemen are putting more protection his way and kind of taking him out of the picture.
But then at least it's getting the guys occupied. I mean, they're occupied taking care of him. But yeah, I could go on and on about this team right now.
Well, I'm maybe a little bit slow to jump on or off of a wagon, but major things need to change. And I know Brian Kelly, I think he likes to brag about how he's never fired anyone before,
Which don't brag about
he
that.
Did Brian, he did Brian Fire Van Gorder. But there needs to be some more changes there in the coaching staff.
Yeah,
because I don't care how young we are, if there's still no excuse. Navy, we've been struggling with them since he's gotten here. Besides 1 year, we've been struggling with them. We continue to lose to teams like, besides last year, where we pretty much beat everyone that we should have beat and almost beat the game,
but barely.
So we were close. But Duke, Michigan State this year is awful. And if you go back a couple more years, there's teams on the schedule that Notre Dame's losing to that they shouldn't be losing to.
Yeah, and I just hope, you know, we've been talking about the, you know, the defensive coach, obviously huge issue this offseason, what's going to happen with the defensive coordinator. I just hope they do not promote anybody from inside the staff. Now, I know the big thing is, oh, well, you know, you're going to have to change everything and this and that. Big deal. Let's change it and make it into a successful defense. I'm not at the point where I just want to fix things up and patch it up. Like, take some risks and do it. I don't think that there's enough excitement. Somebody promoted, which I don't think there's anybody good enough to be promoted as defensive coordinator, be the new defensive coordinator next year on the staff right now. But if you would hire someone from within the staff, I don't think it would cause the...
You need a fire lit under this.
You need a big change.
And Greg Hudson, you know, is kind of that emotional inspirator, but I agree with you. Someone needs to come from outside to really bring some new vision, and I don't know if it's discipline or what it is, but there's lots of issues on this defense. I mean, they're young, but it's not just... it's more than just missed tackles, which that was huge, but missed tackles beginning of the year. Why was that ever a problem?
Yeah.
Substitutions.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
and maybe the worst thing is not having enough guys at certain positions.
You mean enough coach or enough players?
Enough players, which they do right now, but that's why they're so young.
Yeah. So it is recruit, and a huge thing that you're starting to see is just the development of these guys. I mean,
well, and think of linebacker from. Here in Indiana, not Valparaiso, played for the 59ers.
Oh, Josh Barajas.
Josh Barajas. I mean, some services had him out as the top-rated player on that team, and I mean, he's not really close to playing.
Yeah, he's getting no playing time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, things that I love, things that I hate. I have nothing that I love. But things that I hate are these fixable mistakes. That's what I hate. If they're fixable, then they shouldn't exist.
Yeah. I'd say things I love is the young guys that are doing good. Julian Love, what we saw this week. He's one guy that really stuck out. Now, things I don't like is that we see this from this now, but we haven't seen them get that much better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even look at Cole Luke, another cornerback. He was supposed to be a stud this year. But he's regressed.
Well, he regressed the first four games, but I think he's played very well.
Yeah,
They
finally put him in a role where he can succeed. They did figure out some of those, you know, put him in better position, but a lot of that stuff needs to happen in fall camp before the season starts. But yeah, the things I hate is that I think there needs to be changes made with the staff. Huge decision, maybe not right now.
Yeah.
And the more I see from what Brian Kelly is saying and what's happening, it's not going to happen.
And maybe the best thing that could happen is Notre Dame doesn't make a bowl game and Brian Kelly has more...
They're not going to.
Has more time to figure out his coaching staff.
They are not going to make a bowl game.
Well, yeah.
They need two wins.
Yeah, most likely not. Most likely
they're not going to beat USC.
Well, Randall,
they're not going to beat Virginia
as long as,
Tech.
I mean, you can be 0-6 and still have a chance at making a bowl game. I'm just saying, there's still a chance. I mean, I don't think they will, but there is a chance.
They do. There's not enough 6-6 teams that they usually let in, some 5-7 teams. But Notre Dame is not going to make it to 5 wins. They're going to finish the year at 4-8.
Beating Army?
Yeah, I think they can beat Army. I think. They're not beating USC. They're not beating Virginia Tech.
They're 10 or 12 point favorites.
But, yeah.
One other concerning thing just about this team is that it doesn't really matter who we're playing. It's always a close game. I mean, Syracuse wasn't really that close, and neither was Nevada. But whether it's Texas, who is definitely below average, or it's Stanford, who is looking better as of late, they're just playing just always kind of just below the level of the competition. And that's just not good enough.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Brian Kelly's mentioned that they need that killer instinct, but to me, a killer instinct is, you know, some Ohio State, you know, when they're up 50-3, they're still scoring points, which that doesn't, it almost doesn't matter who the coach is in Notre Dame, it never happens.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm just curious what would happen if Notre Dame would lose out, end the season at 3-9, which that was where Charlie Weiss was at, and he had a few more years left over. I don't think Brian Kelly would be fired, even if they would lose these last three games. But I don't think he has any more grace. There's no more grace left over. In fact, I don't think he can lose to Navy again and keep his job.
I would have said earlier this year, I would have said that he's, you know, obviously Swarbrick said that, oh, he's going to be the coach leading the team out of the tunnel next year. But if they lose the next three games, I'm not convinced that he will be.
Well, they're going to lose two of the next three.
I know, but if they lose to Army, I don't know how you can justify. I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing this out there. I am changing my view on that. I was convinced that he's coming back next year, but at the rate of, I mean, how things are going and things that are not happening that need to happen, I guarantee you they're thinking about it twice.
It worries me that whenever Brian Kelly is asked, you know, where does he go to kind of for answers or help with this situation, too often he says, well, just going back on his experience, his 27 years of coaching experience. Jack Swarbrick, and he's probably the smartest guy in Indiana. And I'm sure that he's going to have some, if Notre Dame, especially if they lose out, he's going to have some input as to what's going to happen, what's going to change.
You mean as far as even the assistant coaches?
Yeah.
And what have, yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, some people still think he had something to do with Brian Van Gorder leaving.
Yeah.
I will say that. I think that could happen. That's one way that if they would lose out, that is probably the most likely scenario is that Swarbrick steps in, makes things happen. But at that point, why are you keeping your coach or your head coach around?
Because you just signed him to a 10-year contract extension. I don't see any way that he's gone after this season. Maybe unless it's like a 50-10 loss to Army and a 60-3 against USC and Virginia Tech. Maybe then. But I just think he's back next year. But if he loses again to Navy, I think it's done. I don't care that Navy's a bowl game.
Well, I don't think it has to be Navy. If you have a mediocre season next year.
Well, that was just one opponent I could pick at and say, yeah. All right.
You could go into looking at how the, well, we can do that when we go over the opponent's recap. Look at what their record is. It's bad.
Miami did come away with a nice win.
It's one thing, you know, if we're playing teams that are winning, but the bottom line is, we're not. We're playing teams at the bottom of the.
I wonder where Notre Dame's schedule is at.
The strength
to this point, like the teams that we've played so far.
That's one thing I've not heard this year is strength of schedule. that just came to me now.
I know.
Like even when Notre Dame was losing, it was like, oh, but look at their strength of schedule. That is not. Nobody's bringing that up because their strength of schedule is. It sucks. Should actually see what it is. I don't even want.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to figure out if there's a ranking that goes by.
Usually there's a list, but
to this point in the season,
that is one thing that isn't coming up this year.
I mean, it's only going to get better from here on out. I mean, our Army are they 5-5 and 3?
I think so,
something like that. But then, yeah, Virginia Tech and USC are gonna change that So we should get it figured out now. Anyway, I think we're ready to wrap it up. Round, do you have the winner from the score prediction?
Yes, I did. Let me quick get that here.
And I guess while you guys are waiting, head on over to Pro Football Focus. They do game breakdown of a lot of the college football games. They don't do every one for Notre Dame. They do a lot of them. And they do have one over there for Notre Dame versus Navy.
Yeah, the winner was Andy Gasser, Gasman_2. He Gasman. Predicted Navy 35, Notre Dame 28. So he was actually, I mean, he was pretty close.
Wait, he predicted Navy 35?
Yeah,
okay.
Notre Dame 28. So he did put a frowny face at the end of his tweet when he tweeted in. He didn't want to, but it got him some free coffee. So I guess he can hopefully find some brands, at least
some
one positive
solace.
Thing in his life from this game. I liked what one guy on the message boards on our forums wrote, Solon. He said, at the end of his article, he said, somewhat jokingly, I'd also like to blame the Pro Bowl atmosphere, because a lot of these guys look like they lacked urgency on the sideline. The lack of atmosphere was tough to watch on TV. It felt like a preseason game.
Yeah.
And it was. This is the first time I saw them celebrate, doing something on the sideline, and that time it was fake. There was nothing to be excited about. That was all it, just to try to get something started.
Agreed.
But that's true. Pro Bowl atmosphere.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Check back on Wednesday for our preview podcast when Notre Dame takes on the mighty Army Knights. And until then, go Irish.
Go Irish.